We're not marketing a doll for money. We're empowering women.
I mean, if empowering women is profitable, then sure, then that's what you're doing.
Great.
Yeah.
If empowering one specific female experience
right.
is yeah. profitable, then let's go yeah. for that. Just so you know, I just said, we just sighed at the same time, and then Rhonda said hijinx, and then I said psyjinx, and I need that.
No, I said psyjinx.
You said psyjinx.
I said psyjinx, you because said we sighed at the same time.
And then, it's 8:20 in the morning.
Yeah, that's fine.
This is where my brain is.
We'll find it in the edit.
Hello.
Hi, welcome back to our show. We are here.
That sounded like you weren't 100% on that. Are we here?
We're definitely here. we exist in the world. So unlike Barbie, who does not exist as a real human person in our world.
No. But she did have her gynecologist appointment. So it's
okay. So much to unpack with that scene.
Yeah.
Hi. So we're going to talk about Barbie. Sometimes I think about Barbie.
I've seen this movie so many times. I've
seen it a lot. So I knew as soon as, like, when we saw it together and walked out of the theater, I knew there's going to be so much to explore.
Uh-huh.
When we talk about it on the pod. But before we get into that, Erin.
Yes.
I need to know. Uh-huh. Listeners need to know.
Uh-huh.
What are you watching?
I've seen so many movies in theaters lately.
Cool.
I saw Mean Girls. I love a movie theater. I saw Mean Girls and I saw Argyle. And Argyle took me on a ride of a lifetime.
Uh-huh.
First of all, so spoilers for Argyle if you know, haven't seen it.
Okay.
Sorry. The first 5 minutes, I thought it was just going to be a horrible action movie. I didn't realize it was mm-hmm. part of her book. So that first part is you get a few scenes and you meet this Argyle and there's a bunch of things happening. And I had just come from a 10-hour shift at work. And so I thought, I forgot the whole premise of the movie. And I thought it was just a really bad movie. And then it panned out to her reading, and I was like, oh, okay. And then 5 minutes into that, I thought, oh, no, this is a really bad movie. And then I got, like, deliriously into it, but not... I'm still unpacking. I'm so... this movie! What?
So my description didn't prepare you for it?
So, like... I forgot. Once we get to, I've done, so after on Friday, I've done 2 10-hour days in a row, so I can't remember anything. And then I also sometimes don't like action movies, so I just really thought, oh, maybe they've just gotten this bad, and maybe I just hate this. And then because let's be honest. Some action movies don't make much more sense than that first opening sequence. And so I really just thought, this is going to be a long 2 hours. and then it panned out to her reading. And then I kind of was like, oh, no. Because it's a pet peeve of mine when it pans out and it's like an author reading their book. And she closed. I'm not here for it. But then there was a cat involved and I liked her outfit and so I went along. And then my mom was in it, Catherine O'Hara, and so I was into that for a little bit. But then when the guy, I don't remember his name, but when the guy sits across from her and like his shaggy little face and he's reading the book and he's kind of the goofy whatever, I was not excited.
And then Ariana DeBose having all of like 2 minutes of screen time. She would have vastly improved the movie if she was in it more, right?
Put her like as she the had weird to have. Guy. She should
that's
have...
what I was see. That's what I was thinking. She should have been the one to like try to re-recruit BDH into the spy organization, whatever it was, right?
Honestly,
like,
yeah, and what, how was that not the choice? And then
yeah,
make them the love interests. We don't need this man.
Yeah. Who was, I mean, you would, yeah, you wouldn't have to, like, there didn't have to be a love interest, honestly.
Exactly.
But, like, yeah.
But if there had to, if you felt like there had to be, it was not this Shaggy man and Bryce Dallas Howard. That was, when I cackled, when I say I almost scream laughed when he was like, and we were lovers. I was like, no, you were not. Uh-huh.
No, you weren't.
You were not.
You're trying to gaslight her into being in a relationship with you.
Exactly. And exactly like you said, we don't even need a love interest, but if you needed one, writers, make it Ariana. Do not make it.
Yeah.
This man who, like, what?
I feel you. Yeah. But I also need to know what you thought of Mean Girls.
The revamp in terms of, like, Renee Rapp as Regina, chef's kiss, mm-hmm. beautiful. Incredible yeah. voice. So good. And she made the meanness more real. She made it more real to how people are actually mean versus...
Rather than like cartoonish.
Exactly. Meanness. She was actually mean and strong and scary sometimes, but also playful. I really, really liked her performance. And I could say that for Karen as well. I think that they're... And the other one whose name I can't remember, who's played by Lacey Chabert in the original. But
Gretchen.
Gretchen, thank you, Gretchen.
And none for Gretchen Wieners.
And none. I thought, and you know what? All of the, like, supporting cast I thought were incredible in being more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
The songs were fun and well sung because they had more of a pop music bent than, like, a classic musical theater bent. I did not need you to keep every single... inside joke from the original and play it the exact same way. We didn't. Maybe that, and that's where translating a musical into a movie is hard, because that will play really well in a musical space, like we've talked about before, when we have 2 seconds to establish things, and so we do that quickly and it works pretty well on a stage. It felt flat. I don't want to be disrespectful, but I didn't love the sameness of the Katie Heron character. I thought it was...
You wanted, like, a little bit more of an edge to her or something, maybe?
Yeah, the same way that everyone else was revamped and a little bit more truthful. I felt that, I mean, her acting was, you know, the direction of the movie. It's nothing to do with the actress or whatever, but... The music and the attitudes were really revamped in a nice, like, saying something new type way. And then we were kind of, like, chained to these things that had worked really well in the original that didn't land in the theater either. Like, no one laughed at them because we knew them. Like, a favorite moment of mine from the original, and, I mean, I'm not alone in this, many people... is when they're doing the trust fall and they say she doesn't even go here. That was no longer surprising, and so we didn't need that, but she sure did even get to sing a little bit in that moment, and it was just like, again, that would feel kitschy and fun on the theater stage,
but
we didn't need it. So that's those are my... Have you seen it? Will you see it?
No, I will see it, like, once it makes its way to a streaming platform. But yeah, I am kind of like, I mean, you know how I feel about, like, stage musicals in general.
Yeah.
And then making movies out of those stage musicals, especially when it's a musical that's based on a movie. Like, why are we doing this? What is the point?
Yeah.
Anyway, I will watch it, though, just because I love Mean Girls.
Yeah.
And I've heard really good things about the performances, like you've been saying. So I'll watch it, but...
The performers were the only ones saying something new, I would say.
Right.
Tell me what you've been watching.
This is actually, like, a couple weeks ago, and I was going to talk about it last episode, but I talked about something else. But I watched the Netflix series Made, which is from, like, I don't know, a few years ago. Have you heard of it?
I think I... Wait, hold on. I think I've seen it. Tell me more. Tell me more, maybe.
Yeah, so it's inspired by a book, which I ended up reading the book as well after I watched the show. So it's about this So like it starts like one night where she has to take her daughter and leave her partner because he's abusive, right? So yeah, so it starts like really heavy. It kind of stays that way the whole time. But it's good. It stays
there, yeah.
Yeah. So like in the series, you see her like try to go through like all of these, you know, government assistance programs to try to, because like she has no money. She doesn't have a job. She doesn't have a place to live. Her family is kind of not really like they're in her life, but like they're not super reliable. So like she has to find some way to find a place to live and support her daughter. And so she ends up getting this like kind of sketchy job with a maid service.
Yeah.
And so it really just like follows her as she like goes through, she hits like all these roadblocks with, you know, trying to get support from the government for, you know, for like EBT and for like rental assistance and like all of those government assistance programs that we have in place that are supposed to help people, but that just have so much red tape and bureaucracy around them that it's nearly impossible for most people in that situation to actually get assistance, right? So then, like, yeah, so I watched the show and thought it was really great, really enjoyed it. And so then I listened to the audiobook of the book, which is a memoir. And so, like, they changed a lot of things for the show. Like, they changed everybody's names. And they changed, like, the timeline a little bit, but, like, they kind of still kept that same, like, essence of, like, this is the reality for people who are living in poverty. Like, you know, of course we know, like, people who are poor are not that way because they're lazy.
Yeah.
They're actually, like, most people who are living in that kind of economic bracket are actually working very hard.
Yeah.
To support themselves and support their families. But because of the way our system is structured, there's just little to no chance that they'll ever be able to work themselves out of it. So yeah, just very like highly recommend. It's just a very like eye-opening look. So something cool that I thought the show did was like it like stylistically it would like when she's talking to like the social worker at the beginning, the social worker would like say out loud what her inner monologue was, that like, you're a lazy poor person, like this is never gonna work out for you, like things like that, right? And then like there's another scene where she has to fill out like all this paperwork to apply for some kind of assistance program, and like she's flipping through the pages and they all say things like, you're lazy, you're not good enough, right? Like, so yeah, really interesting stylistic choice that was like very subtle, but still added that kind of heightened like emotionality to it that I thought was really well done.
I really like too how she would be crossing out how much things costs, and it would show on the screen to kind of show how your brain is constantly trying to do the math to figure out. I also, it's so interesting that Margaret Qualley is the daughter of Andy McDowell.
Andy McDowell. Yeah. And that's kind of fun that they played mother daughter.
And she was like heartbreaking. That mom character like broke my whole soul that she was so creating herself as the victim and saying like her daughter was expecting too much and, oh, I don't know where your kid is. And then the panic. Oh, gosh, that show was.
She was parentified.
Absolutely.
Right? Absolutely. I just learned that word from you. Yeah.
And the amount of times that happens. Oh, my gosh. It's, wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. But then I also read a book that just came out this week by Ali Hazelwood, which I think I've talked about Ali Hazelwood before. She's most known for like contemporary romance rom-com books. So like I know when I read an Ali Hazelwood book, I'm going to have a good time. And this was no different, but this was not like a contemporary. It was still a romance, but it was like paranormal romance. Ooh. So it's a vampire and a werewolf who have to have an arranged marriage, because of course they do, right? For romance reasons. So yeah, so it was really fun. Like,
oh, I like
it
that.
Did I say what it was called? The title is Bride. So it just came out and it was a great time. So
that's
I would recommend that to you on your romance journey.
On my rom-com journey?
On your rom-com journey. Because it really is a rom-com that just happens to be about vampires and werewolves.
My Sunday ritual has turned into going to the bookshop, getting a rom-com, and then taking myself to brunch. That's
become... I love that so much.
So perhaps I'll take a gander.
And do see that. If it's there. Okay. And then, of course, Abbott is back. But you know what, Erin? We need to get to the episode.
I know. And so in their next episode, I was so heartbroken by this first episode. And we'll get to it. That'll be like a...
I didn't watch it until like a couple days after it, you know, first aired. And my coworker told me, she's like, you're going to be so mad at Gregory. And I'm like, no, I'm not ready to be mad at Gregory. No, I love him.
I'm not ready.
But I was. I really was. Okay, so let's...
And I was so sad for Miss Teagues. Just so sad. But yes.
Yeah. Cool. So let's talk about Barbie. Hi, Barbie. If you've been living under a rock, maybe you don't know what Barbie is. What's Barbie?
What's this movie that came out and that we all freaked out?
I don't know. Barbie is a 2023 fantasy comedy film directed by Greta Gerwig. From a screenplay she wrote with Noah Baumbach, but he's just Ken. So of course, it's based on the eponymous fashion doll by Mattel. And it really is just, you know, a feature-length commercial for a Mattel product. Uh-huh. Like, and I think that's important to keep in mind as we discuss it. Uh-huh. So it's the first live-action Barbie film. Of course, there were numerous... I like how Wikipedia says numerous, because it doesn't actually know how many computer animated films and specials there were. I think it's like 23.
Well, numerous is like that. I use a myriad of when I'm writing something and it needs
a cornucopia. It's a cornucopia of Barbie movies.
If you will.
So, yeah. So Barbie stars Margot Robbie as Barbie. Ryan Gosling is Ken. And it follows them on a journey of self-discovery as they go through Barbie Land, which is like, we'll get to this later, but it's an inverted patriarchy. And they also go to the real world because Barbie has an existential crisis and realize that she might die someday. The supporting cast includes America Ferrera, Oscar nominee America Ferrera. Michael Cera, Kate McKinnon, Issa Rae, Rhea Perlman, and Will Ferrell. What else do we need to know about Barbie before we really dive in? What do you think?
I think that's most of it. We'll get into it later, but the amount of things in this that are like straight out of a therapy 101 textbook, like there's so much therapeutic practice, like... explored in this movie, which is really interesting.
I think also just like the cultural moment that this was, and like at this point it was still, you know, less than a year ago, so
yeah,
like I think that we're still kind of living through like the petering off of that cultural moment, and I think, you know, we'll probably be able to look back like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and be like, yeah, this was a big moment.
And it's also, I've been really enjoying also the, you know, the praise of it, but also the criticism.
Because of course it's not perfect.
Can I say critical criticism?
Critical criticism. Yes.
I just mean the different lenses that are being used to look at the movie now and the different places we're seeing where it holds up or it doesn't, and I think that's been really great.
And of course a big part of the moment and of the discourse is Barbenheimer. Did you see Oppenheimer?
I didn't, but I own a Barbenheimer shirt.
I never saw it. Oppenheimer either. I think it's gonna be on streaming in like a week, so maybe I'll watch it then.
Yeah, I think the reason I didn't want to see it was I felt like I would zone out, but if I was at home, maybe I wouldn't. I don't know.
I also just feel like, I mean, yes, it's Christopher Nolan, and yes, he's a genius, he's a great director, but like, don't we have enough movies about tortured white men?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Taylor Swift is writing a whole album about it.
And I did worry about, like, glorification of some of the content. Yeah.
But I think that Barbenheimer as a cultural phenomenon is really interesting because, at least in my observation, you know, it would have been very easy to pit them against each other.
Right.
But I didn't see very many people doing that. I mostly saw, like, we're going to do both, right?
Like, yeah, I just think right now we need joy so badly.
Yeah.
When there's a moment, we take it because things continue to be so scary and so hard. I think we're just grasping for any time to not feel that.
Like I observed at least even people that you would not stereotype as being the type of person to want to see Barbie or to want to see Oppenheimer, deciding that, no, we're going to do both because this is an important cultural thing, right?
Totally.
Like, and it's kind of funny that, okay, so not to stereotype, but I did see a lot of men kind of talking about how, yeah, they're going to go see Barbie, but like kind of ironically.
Yeah.
And then being like surprised that they liked it. And I'm like, okay. And I did not see like the reverse with like women with Oppenheimer, right? Like,
right.
So it's just interesting.
Yeah, there was like an additional vulnerability to I'm going to go see Barbie. There was like that brought up, this is such a therapist thing for me to say. Oh gosh, but it brought up a vulnerability for people. It was like it had to be protected. We had to laugh it off, or we had to like make fun of it, or like I didn't feel that way, but there were people who felt seemingly, oh, it's really vulnerable to say I'm going to Barbie right now.
Yeah.
Which is like fascinating.
It's very fascinating. Of course, you and I were not in that camp.
No, we dressed up and had fun.
We dressed up.
I saw that movie 3 times in the theater.
Yeah. I bought a purple heart-shaped purse.
Cute. I have a Barbie sweatshirt.
As an accessory.
Yeah.
Oh, love that. But I still use that purple heart-shaped purse, so.
It's a cute purse.
It's great. It reminds me of like a sweetheart candy or the conversation hearts.
Yeah. Calling them. I think it's hilarious that they're called conversation. It just sounds so like.
I think that's like the generic name, but the brand name is sweethearts.
Yeah.
Initial thoughts on Barbie?
Any
experiences?
Were you
playing with Barbies?
Were you into them as a kid? Did you have like your
Barbie? Oh, yeah. 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 I definitely had a collection that grew with each birthday and Christmas.
Of course.
But so it's so interesting. Like, if you talk to women, you know, like, probably like women of any age who played with Barbies as children, like, you'll hear the most, like, interesting ways that we played with Barbies that were maybe, like, not foreseen by the people who make Barbies.
For sure.
Which is so interesting because it seems like people who make toys should understand how children play with toys.
Right.
Right. And many of them don't. It's so interesting. I have a whole thing about the Disney Princess Hasbro dolls that...
Oh my god.
Anyway, so... So I had a Barbie collection. And what I usually did with my Barbies is I would like dress them up in specific outfits and then create like scenes, like dioramas, like here, this is going to be a party scene. So they're having a party, or like this is a tea party scene. So we're going to pose all the Barbies.
Yeah.
Right. And then when I would actually do like dramatic play with them, it was like, It was usually like very like mundane things. Uh-huh. They were like, oh, we're going to go to the store together. Let's all get in the car. We're going to go to the store. Oh, you know what? We need to do the laundry. Let's fold these clothes. Yeah. Like that was that's what I did with them. And like very, very rarely would I do these like dramatic, scandalous stories right. with my Barbies. Yeah.
Exploring so, the world around yeah. you. Yeah.
I definitely had like that kind of imagination, but I didn't use Barbies to channel it, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
You were not a fan of Barbies, were you?
I wasn't a fan. We had a bunch of plastic horses that we would play with instead of Barbies.
Were they My Little Pony?
They were like more realistic. They were kind of like okay. if Barbie were a horse.
Because I also had a My Little Pony collection.
I had some My Little Ponies as well. I always favored, my thing was Beanie Babies a little bit more because they were comfy. But there were, you know, friends of mine had Barbies and we would play with them. And and in like first and second grade, we were using them to think about romantic relationships in yeah. like a really weird way. Like, we were like, oh, Barbie and Ken are gonna kiss. And like, what does that mm-hmm. mean to kiss someone? And like, it was very much how we explored like romance and kind of mm-hmm. those things that were not really talked about yet.
But you saw them in like kids, especially like kids media
yeah.
directed toward girls yeah. was, you know, is like when we were kids was very often some kind of romance developed. Which yeah. is very interesting when you think about it.
And it, you know, it's really fascinating to see, like, because there was definitely, like, this is how a romance is. So that's what we were doing with them. And it was almost like whenever we needed to process what romance was, we would take out the Barbies. Mm-hmm. And then they laid dormant any other time. It was weird. Mm-hmm. Childhood's yeah. interesting. I did have the Spice Girls dolls.
The of like course.
Realistic Spice Girls dolls.
Yeah.
And those
were they made by Mattel?
I think so.
Yeah. Mattel used to be like dominant in the fashion doll
yeah.
market. I don't think they are anymore, mostly because Hasbro now does the Disney Princess dolls.
Well, and there's Monster High and Bratz and all yeah, of those scary that's things.
That's true. Oh, yes. Bratz. Oh, my gosh.
The girls with the passion for fashion.
I know. So, fashion dolls. We are going to get to table of contents, but we thought since we have so much.
Yeah.
To discuss with Barbie, we're going to do like a quick little breakdown here just to give us a baseline for what we're going to talk about in our ensuing episodes. So, fashion dolls, I think it's interesting to note that originally they were not actually made for children.
Sure.
We have fashion dolls which, according to one source that I found, could have been in use as early as the 14th century
wow.
in Europe. So they would basically just be used as like a miniature model for dressmakers to kind of showcase their designs.
Oh, sure.
Because, of course, like it would take, you know, it would cost the dressmaker like a lot of money to make a full size gown.
Right.
You know, like using all that fabric. So they would make a miniature version of it and be like, I can make you this gown in your size if you pay me, right? yeah. And at a certain point, they started being called Pandora dolls, which I think is very interesting, considering like the Greek mythology about Pandora, who, yeah. you know, was the first woman, which I think that's kind of where the name comes from, is that she's the first woman. So she's kind of like, in Greek mythology, she's kind of like the original woman that all other women are modeled from.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes sense for a fashion doll, but it's also interesting to think about in the context of Barbie and how she's kind of become a, if not a role model, at least like kind of a symbol that women have attempted to or are expected to model themselves after, right?
Yeah.
So very, like, very interesting connection there, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, they were used throughout Europe by dressmakers in royal courts mostly, and then also, like, for nobility. So there's references in letters dating to, like, the early 1500s. Mary Queen of Scots references them in one of her letters at one point. Wow. So just a nice little factoid there. So they became more common kind of like as the Industrial Revolution gets underway and as like people who you were once of like lower economic means start to, you know, kind of rise to like wealthier like merchants and things like that.
Sure.
So they sort of become more popular as this new middle class emerges and they also want to buy, you know, fancy clothes. So so fashion dolls become more popular as the fashion industry grows until the late 18th century, which is when we start to see illustrated fashion magazines become more common, especially in France. So we have the use of fashion magazines to kind of model dressmakers' designs, and then we also have the fashion dolls, and they kind of go hand in hand. And then we get to the early 19th century, which is when we see the rise of the House of Worth, which introduced living human models in the 1850s. And so we start to see the use of fashion dolls decline a little bit for that original use, but that's also the point at which we start to see children playing with their parents' fashion dolls.
Sure.
And so we start to see this idea develop of like using them as toys for children, kind of simultaneously to being used as fashion dolls. But then they still, you know, were not super popular as like toys because they're, you know, pretty expensive.
Yeah.
So they're not super popular as toys into the early 20th century. And so at this point is where, you know, the mid 20th century is where we really see a resurgence of that, mostly because of Barbie. So
yeah.
It's interesting, like the sort of the mythos that Mattel wants to perpetuate about how Barbie came to be versus how it actually happened. I don't know if you know this whole history.
I don't think.
Okay. Yeah. So the story that Mattel tells is that Ruth Handler noticed that her daughter Barbara and her friends were more interested in playing with paper dolls than with like baby dolls. And so she was like, oh, I should make like a 3D doll that's an adult for them to play with. Like she just kind of came up with this idea, but she didn't. it was actually so she actually Barbie, like the original Barbie, is modeled on, I don't have a source directly in front of me, so I'm kind of going from memory here, so take this with a grain of salt, but she's modeled from a German doll called Lily that is actually like, so like it's an adult, like adult as in like adult bookstore kind of adult,
yeah,
doll that was like given between lovers as a way of saying like, I don't know, like it's kind of like a sexy gift to give someone was like the idea of it. And so yeah, so that's like the original Barbie was modeled off of that doll basically. Of course Mattel, you know, doesn't want their image associated with that.
So. That's so funny.
Yeah. Barbies are a thing now.
And you know, you can kind of see that in the faces of like the original ones. You can kind of see like, I don't know. The whole idea that the mission of Barbie was to like show women that they could be anything. Is hard for me to hear because it doesn't feel that way.
Right.
And it, we'll explore this later, but the way that stereotypical Barbie is presented in one way, we again, we can say that she's presenting multiple different communities, but that doesn't really happen authentically for mm-hmm. a long time. And
yeah,
just this thought that now female identifying humans could do anything if they fit these dimensions and were white and
mm-hmm.
put also there's a
and look like Margot Robbie
and look like Margot Robbie and you just and also there's something hard for me to swallow about, oh, we gave her the clothes and now she's that career. It rings as false as what you've just shared. It like
mm-hmm.
we're not marketing a doll for money, we're empowering women.
I mean, if empowering women is profitable, then sure, that's what you're doing.
Great.
Yeah.
Empowering one specific female experience
right.
is yeah. profitable. Then let's go yeah. for that. And just like remembering how like other Barbies were discussed, and there was mm-hmm. like Barbie and then there was her sidekicks and how damaging that is, and just I think there's so much to unpack there that is still kind of being gaslit a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's complicated, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure that there are women for whom Barbie was that kind of inspiration.
I'm sure, of course. Yeah.
But it's kind of naive, I think, to, like you're saying, to just assume that was Mattel's pure intention from the beginning, because it obviously was not. Like they're a company in a capitalistic economy.
Yeah.
Like, of course.
Yeah.
Like, their main goal is making money, right? And if they decide that they will make more money by having this kind of women's empowerment message, then of course that's what they're gonna do.
And I think there's something to be said too for like the way that the LGBTQIA2S+
mm-hmm.
community is represented in this movie.
Yeah.
Specifically is I think we can say it continues to be damaging and continues to exist yeah. in a stereotype without mm-hmm. having the conversation that's
right.
negative and dangerous. It's like
there was inclusion, but there was really no examination of how that inclusion should look.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of ends up being like, well, they're there, but
yeah.
What are we saying? Yeah.
That I think the same can be said of Black women in the movie, of
yes.
Yep. the disability community in the movie. Like it's a hard one. And I think that's kind of the literature we were talking about, where really incredible people are looking at those pieces of the movie that fell flat and that felt
mm-hmm.
continuing yeah. to other people.
Yeah. And in a way we can say that, like, so I'm going to talk all about Barbie Land in a later episode, about how we're presented with Barbie Land as like this perfect place where all women are included and feel welcome. And then like we see that that's not actually the case, because like we have Weird Barbie
yeah.
and then we have like the Kens and Alan who are not fully included either.
Right.
And so I think that like in sort of a meta way, we're seeing that Barbie Land is not actually perfect.
Yeah.
It's not actually a feminist utopia. And I don't know that that was like intentional
uh-huh.
on the part of the filmmakers, but it's kind of poetic in a way that, like, you know, not everyone is included in Barbie Land, even though it appears that way. And not everyone is, you know, done right by in this film, even though it maybe kind of appears that way. Right.
And was, yeah. And I think that brings us to our table of contents. I'm really excited for yeah. you to explore that.
Yes. I am really excited to talk about Barbie Land, about feminist utopias and matriarchies, and what actually most fictional matriarchies are actually inverted patriarchies. So we'll talk about the differences between those. So we're looking at a few books that came to mind. And then also, like, there was this whole genre of sci-fi movies in the 50s where like astronauts would go to planets that were all women. And this is really interesting. So we'll dig into those and see like how we've always kind of been exploring this idea of like, what if there were no men, or what if society was flipped so that women were the dominant gender, right?
Yeah.
So we'll look at a few different stories that explore that idea. And then we'll also look at how Barbie Land, you know, as we were kind of already talking about, like how Barbie Land in some ways is kind of a feminist utopia, but in many ways is also kind of a dystopia or an inverted patriarchy. Yeah. So yeah, so we'll talk about that.
Cool.
What are you really excited to talk about? You've got some interesting stuff here too.
This conversation made me realize why I was confused about what I was writing, because I had it made me realize I had my two topics as one. So age, gender, and sexuality.
Okay.
The specific conversations that we have when Barbie comes into the real world and she meets the woman waiting for the bus and she says, you're beautiful. And the woman says, I know it.
Yeah.
Because women past a certain age are not expected to feel beautiful and are given this whole, I would even say it's part of the Americana mythos that you're not allowed to age or be sexual past a certain age. And so we'll look at some studies that have been done about age and sexuality and how that does not change. We still shockingly want to be desired and have sex. Also, like, I'm also thinking about the specific scene in the beginning where Ken goes to kiss Barbie and he's like, can I come over? And she's like, why
what would we do?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. And so exploring that and how media tells us, kind of like the exploration we did as when I was a kid with our Barbies about romance and sexuality, how those moments are reflected in them.
Well, I mean if you thought that I wasn't going to talk about the fact that Depression Barbie's comfort show is the Pride and Prejudice miniseries, you don't know me at all. So this is interesting because I'm actually, I don't know if listeners know this, I am writing a book and I'm writing a chapter in the book about Jane Austen's influence on narratives about women's interiority and like journeys to finding themselves, right?
Yeah.
So I have the receipts. I have the citations of Greta Gerwig saying at certain points that she has gotten inspiration from Jane Austen. So we can talk about that. But I think that it's really going to be more about like, yeah, the interior lives of women. And then also this idea of women, both in Barbie and in the work of Jane Austen, struggling against the patriarchy in various ways.
Yeah.
And kind of how, you know, like the whole point of Barbie is that it's very overt about that. And in Jane Austen, it's much more subtle, of course, but I see a kinship there. So we're going to talk about Jane Austen.
Yeah.
And Barbie.
I love that.
And then you're going to talk about Weird Barbie.
I'm going to really go ham on Weird Barbie.
Yes.
And it's going to be, hold on to your seats, friends, because it's going to be critical, because I think it hit the mark and missed the mark. I think almost, you know, maybe in equal parts. I think there's some things that, I mean, I could watch Kate McKinnon spread butter. Like, I don't care. Like, she's so funny.
She would do it in a really funny way.
Imagine it. Oh, yeah. And I also, so I think that there are things that we did do with that conversation. And then I think that there are things that just became a joke and fell flat for me. You know, as one of the many humans who goes through life not feeling like I fit in with with who I'm supposed to be as a woman, some parts of me really, really did relate with Weird Barbie. And some of them were like, almost like, oh, that hit something for me. Oh, that's maybe mm-hmm. like a response that I've felt to my own humanity and who I am. Yeah. So I think it's just going to be, and there's been a lot of good critical, both positive and negative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be about positive or negative. I think we can just explore.
Yeah.
Like the ways that weirdness is allowed to exist. Mm-hmm. And like weirdness when it's still cute or aesthetically pleasing or, you know, funny or charming or whatever.
Best kind of girl is a quirky girl.
Exactly. Versus a human being doing and existing exactly the way that they are and how that's entirely different. So, gonna get into it. I'm excited.
So I also just had this like dangling topic that I'm like, I don't know if this, we'll talk about this if we have time, because I also like feel kind of weird about it, but okay. I really, really have a lot of feelings about the like Christian Catholic creation theology that's woven through Barbie.
Yeah.
So like Greta Gerwig was even quoted as say, I'm going to be quoting Greta Gerwig a lot. So she even talked about how like, so like Barbie Land is like the Garden of Eden and Barbie has this intrusive thought about death, which like, how could she possibly know about death? Much like Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, according to, you know, according to Genesis, where they like had no knowledge of good and evil, no knowledge of death until the serpent is like, hey, so like there's such an interesting parallel here. And I know that Greta Gerwig has like a Catholic background. So I think that would be really interesting to explore, which like you can see in Lady Bird, like, of course.
Yeah.
So much going on there, right? So I think that would be interesting to explore.
Absolutely.
But I also am like, you know what? If we don't have time to get to this, that's okay.
Because I want to hear about it.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll just have to make time then. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. Was that all of our topics?
I think that's all of our...
We have a lot.
We have a lot. We have
a lot to talk about.
we had a full response to this movie.
We had a full, nuanced, well-rounded response to Barbie.
Yeah.
Do you want to take the quiz?
Ooh, yeah. Let's do that.
Okay. We're going to find out which Barbie character we are. And it's important to note that the cast of Barbie actually took this quiz.
Cute.
Oh, I didn't watch the video.
I think I saw the thumbnail for that video. I should watch that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe we should watch that. Okay. So we got to scroll a little bit to get to the quiz. Do you want to read the first question?
Sure. First, what's a quality you look for in a friend? Kindness, loyalty, sense of adventure, empathy, creativity, sense of humor. That's it.
That's it. I mean, all of them, ideally.
For sure.
Which I've been very fortunate in my friends
that have
all of these. But I think probably like the most important thing, if we're going to be friends, really empathy, right?
That's where I'm going to. Yeah. It's also interesting, though, because that just made me think of like, how when you meet someone new, there's just a feeling, you know, there's just like a, oh, this works or it doesn't.
You just know.
Yeah.
You click. Yeah. It's not like you're watching them being like, do they have this quality that I'm looking for in a friend?
Hold okay, on, let me take out friends. The data.
Like, no, that's not what happens.
Yeah.
Pick a color to paint your dream house.
Ooh.
Bubblegum pink, seafoam green, sunset orange, electric violet, robin's egg blue, or bumblebee yellow. I've always thought that yellow houses are so cute. I'm gonna go with that.
I love a yellow house. I really do. I'm gonna go electric violet.
Oh, okay.
Tonight's girls' night. Pick a Barbie to co-host your slumber party. Author Barbie, physicist Barbie, mermaid Barbie, lawyer Barbie, Diplomat Barbie or Dr. Barbie?
You know, I think Mermaid Barbie would probably have, like, the best hookup for interesting foods.
Absolutely.
<I don't> So I'm gonna go with Mermaid.
As you may know, Rhonda, one of my best friends is writing a book, so I'm going to go author Barbie, because that's my real life. That's
and now
you.
Pick a movie to watch with all your best friends. Mamma Mia. These are some great choices. Bring it on.
These are.
The Notebook, Little Women, The Wizard of Oz, or To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Well, it's easy to rule out The Notebook right away. I would not subject anyone I liked to that.
Yeah.
But the other five, this is a tough choice.
I know.
Because they're all classic.
I'm going a hate watch of The Notebook. We're going to make fun of
The Notebook. Okay. That's what you could doing. Do a Mr. Science Theater.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm going to go Bring It On because I feel like that's such a childhood nostalgia.
Oh, for sure.
Classic.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Choose a song to belt out at karaoke. To Be Loved by Lizzo. Bad Guy by Billie Eilish. Closer to Fine by Indigo Girls. Late Night Talking by Harry Styles. Cuff It by Beyonce. Or Levitating by Dua Lipa.
See, Levitating would be good, but you know I've got to go with Bad Guy.
I also have to go Bad Guy.
Yeah, it's just so fun. Choose the inspiration for another iconic toy-themed movie.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, there's already American Girl doll movies. Like, yeah. What are you smoking?
Best and feed? Books. Yeah.
Tonka trucks, Cabbage Patch Kids, Beanie Babies. I feel like that'd be a horror movie. Webkinz or Barrel of Monkeys. You know, Cabbage Patch Kids might be funny because, like, you know how they had this whole backstory about how, like, if you get a brand new Cabbage Patch Kid, it comes with adoption papers that you have to sign?
Yeah.
So I feel like that would be interesting fodder for a movie. So we'll go with that.
That is interesting. So Barrel of Monkeys was already featured in Toy Story.
Barrel of Monkeys, your battleship sunk me.
Think of all the joy. Oh, still makes me laugh.
We need to rewatch that. That episode.
I've been craving some Gilmore Girls through the lens of today because I have to go Beanie Babies because they were my favorite as a kid, and that would just be like pure nostalgia. And finally, choose something from... Oh, this, we really just lost the thread here. And finally, just choose something that just feels so lackluster.
A thing from this movie.
Whatever, just pick something.
Okay.
We have Mattel Headquarters, Barbie's cowgirl outfit, The Real World, no, Barbie's giant blowout party, Weird Barbie's Weird House, or the Ken War.
I'm gonna go Ken War.
Nice.
I wish I could choose the Ken musical dance number.
Yeah. I have to pick Barbie's giant party because I have dreams about her outfit here. I love it so much.
It's so cute.
It's so cute. The iridescent.
So disco.
Yeah. Ooh, who'd you get?
Ooh. I'm Ken.
That's amazing.
It says, your personality matches Ken. You're passionate, motivated, and just a little bit goofy. Like Ken, you're still figuring out who you are in this big wild world. But just know your friends will always have your back. Sometimes you might be a little lost in life, but just remember, you are Ken, and Ken is you.
I think you're the least lost human I know, but that doesn't fit for me.
I also just think that Ken was, like, such a misstep of the entire movie.
Yeah.
I know that everybody seems to love Ken, but it's, yeah. Anyway, who did you get?
I love him for Ryan Gosling's performance.
Yeah. I think Ryan Gosling was miscast, honestly.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it just gets back to, I think sometimes even the messaging in the movie gets a little confused.
Yeah. There's way too much focus on Ken.
Yeah. Okay.
Who did you get?
And nothing really ever resolves either. I got President Barbie, which no.
Issa Rae.
It says I'm smart, ambitious, and logical. I'm not logical. Okay, BuzzFeed. Well, you missed on this one, BuzzFeed.
Yeah, you really missed. You really screwed the pooch on this one.
You missed the mark here.
You missed the mark. So who do you self-identify as from Barbie? Weird Barbie?
/ America Ferrera's character.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, but...
I think I would be Alan.
Alan.
Or author Barbie, as you astutely pointed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we can end this episode, I just need to say no one has brought up Simu Liu's performance in this.
Oh my gosh.
His smile.
So funny.
His like so joy funny. And smile. And I mean, pick him for main Ken.
Yes, he could have been the main Ken. That would have been great.
Main Ken.
Or Beach Ken, because his job is beach. So. I have also I've read and watched a lot of things about Barbie, like behind the scenes things. And apparently Simu Liu was like campaigning hard to be cast as a Ken, which just makes me love them even more.
And you can tell in the performance.
You can tell that he loves being there. It's great.
But there's not a maliciousness to his Ken. His Ken is just joyful.
He just wants Barbie to be friends with him.
Well, we need to talk about all that too, because that's another one that's really interesting.
There's a whole thing.
Really interesting for like a joke maybe, but I wonder if we could have resolved that differently too. Anyway.
Anyway. Okay, so that's what we're going to talk about with Barbie. Thank you for things. Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Okay. Bye, Barbie.
Bye, Barbie.
Okay, bye.